We will start soon. I'm just waiting for, you know, finalizing the public participation, remote participation setup. We'll be starting soon. If you are here for the ESSEC open session, the room has been changed to 300.
Check 1, 2. Check 1, 2.
So I'm going to start. Hello, everyone. My name is Carla Valenti. I'm Director of Product Services and Communications for ICANN. I have been involved with new GTOD since 2007. I was director of the GTOD program for quite some time, and now I'm focusing my time on communications, which is quite an undertake at this stage of the program. This session is about new GTOD basics. It is not an in-depth of the applicant guidebook or any of the open issues that we discussed during ICANN meetings. So let's start. So what are GTODs? So GTODs stand for generic top-level domain, or domains in this case. There are some domain names that are called sponsor domain names that were from a previous round of applications that I will talk a little bit later. It is the end of your internet address, so everything that comes after the dot. As you can see here, the example is www.icann.org. .org is the top-level domain. Some top-level domains will have a specific purpose, like .com was envisioned to be commercial, although the use of it, you know, it's quite flexible. But we have some more specific TODs or GTODs like .museum that are specifically meant for museums, or .asia that are specifically meant for the Asian region, or to promote, you know, businesses and communication within the Asian region. Every TOD, even though it's generic, has its own requirements, which means that some generic TODs are restricted and some are unrestricted. And as you try to register a TOD, you have to go through the requirements and understand what this registry is asking from you. Sometimes individuals, for example, can register. Sometimes only businesses can register. Sometimes you can only register, for example, if you are a non-for-profit organization. So there's different rules in every TOD. Every TOD is unique in that respect. This is different from the country code top-level domains, usually represented by two characters after the dot, like, for example, .us for the United States, .be for Belgium, .eu for European Union. In this case, you know, encompassing a region, not only a country. And yes, there is a bit of an inconsistency because .eu represents the European Union region, but then we have .asia that is classified as generic, and sometimes people ask me, you know, why do we have this kind of inconsistency? So there are some historical reasons why we have that, but .eu is a two-character and is meant for a very specific politically and economically defined region that we have here. You will see that sometimes people refer to GTODs in different terms, let's say, when they talk about the new GTOD program, GTOD, so they say TOD, which is top-level domain strings or top-level label, and we all mean the same, which is what are these characters that come after the dot. And in the new GTOD program case, those characters are not only ASCII, which is the Roman-based characters, but they could also be other characters, non-ASCII characters like Chinese or Korean or, you know, some of the other languages. So some very quick historical background. We say that we are represented by 21 generic top-level domains in the root zone. There are 8 that predate ICANN, and I don't know why the slide is not showing them here. Ah, okay. So there you go. There's those 8 that predate ICANN, and then 7 were added during the 2000 application process, which was a very limited process for application, and the requirements and all of the rules around that process were quite different from what the new GTOD program is today. Then we had another round in 2004, sometimes we say 2003, depending on whether or not you're looking at the starting or the ending of that specific round. But then you see here again 7 more TODs added to the root. And as you can see here, we have quite a diverse set of GTODs. As I said initially, depending on the GTOD, it serves a different purpose. So, for example, .mobi, you know, it's a TOD that is really tailored for mobile phones. So there's a special technology and everything that, you know, this TOD is envisioned for mobile use. .cat is for the Catalan community. It's a linguistic cultural TOD. So as you can see, the proposals are different, as are the rules for registration. But this is the what we have in the current landscape. Those two rounds, the 2000, 2003 and 4 rounds, as I said to you, they are very different rounds in terms of rules and requirements, but they were very important for us to understand the process, to understand you know, what would be the best thing to do if we were to introduce a program that would have just an ongoing type of application. So it really helped the planning, you know, by the genus. So if you look at the root, you know, it's a very high level. This is what you see. On one side, we see the 21 GTODs. On the other side, you see here represented the country code top-level domains, like .jp for Japan and so forth. Usually, or now, the GTODs are 3 characters or more. And the CCTODs are represented by 2 characters. This kind of changes a little bit the landscape with the fast track and with the new GTODs. But in the current industry, this is usually how you see that. In the GTODs, there's a very specific agreement that is signed with ICANN. So this contractual relationship is very clearly defined, and you see all of those agreements are posted and open to the public. In the case of CCTOD, there is various legal arrangements that some CCTODs have with ICANN, but not a standard agreement as in the case of the GTODs. In the GTODs, there is a registrar system in today's industry, which means that every registry works through a registrar system to be able to sell the domains or to be able to introduce the domains into a marketplace. So we as users, for example, do not buy, if I want to register Carla.com, I would not get that directly from VeriSign, who is today the registrar of .com. I could get from one of the registrars, a credit registrar, so for example, GoDaddy, you know, it's a known one. It doesn't mean that the CCTODs do not have a registrar system. Many of them do. Many of them have a registrar system that are for registrars only in that country. Some of them have registrars that are also GTOD registrars. Some of them have hybrid systems, which means you can register directly with the registry or with one of the registrars that they say is accredited. Some of them don't have a registrar system at all. Then you have on the GTODs a UDRP system, a Uniform Dispute Resolution System, and when it comes to the CCTODs, it will vary depending on the country. Some of them have the UDRP, some of them have their own UDRP, some of them, you just, if you have any kind of legal dispute, you would have to rely on the local legal system because there's no specific DRP. Some of them have some kind of administrative review depending on the issue that you have. So again, the systems are quite different. When we have the new GTODs introduced, so when you look at the slide on the bottom left corner, in the new GTODs, after the DOT, we are going to have potentially different types of TOD. So DOT and then a brand that follows. DOT and maybe an IDN that follows, or an acronym of a company, or an acronym of something else, like, for example, a city acronym, like the NYC I hear about. You also have DOT and then maybe the region, like we have DOT Asia nowadays. In the future, maybe we have DOT LAC, like, for example, for the Latin America, or DOT Middle East, or DOT something else, you know, that represents the whole region. We can have also a DOT and then, you know, a country name, or there's some specific rules about those. A DOT and then a community, and then also there are specific rules of what means a community in that specific program. But for example, DOT Cherokee or DOT Navarro, you know, as a community. Then dot city or dot generic. In the case of dot generic, what I mean here is like something, for example, like dot music or something like dot news. In the IDN, you can see on the right, and this is an example of the fast track program, what we have today. Those are the TODs that were added to the root. So you have the Russian and you have the Arabic scripts that are added to the root. In the future, we are going to have this as well on the generic top-level domains. Why is ICANN involved in generic top-level domains? Oftentimes when I talk about generic top-level domains around the world, people just feel very puzzled about this whole complexity of this DNS system and the existence of ICANN and ICANN's role into it, because as users, they would go to a registrar or they would go through a very commercial process and just get their domain names, and some of them would get together a package with the website, etc. So it's like those domain names come from heaven, they just exist on the internet, and you know, you do a registration. But there's an organization behind it, an organization that is responsible for the technical coordination and responsible for policy and everything that impacts those TODs, particularly the GTODs. And it is in our mission, and you will find in some of our founding documents the reasoning behind, you know, us managing that and why we are expanding that. The very basic argument that is used for expanding GTODs is to help to promote competition. It's to help to promote consumer trust and consumer choice. Policy and program development. So ICANN is a very unique organization from a standpoint that we have volunteers from all over the world, and we have organizations that are part of ICANN, like the GNSO, which is the Generic Name Supporting Organizations. And the Generic Name Supporting Organization is composed by individuals from different organizations, like the intellectual property, the registrar, registry, representation, and so forth. And this is the organization that actually developed the policy that is used as a foundation for the program that we develop today, that staff develops today. This policy has 19 recommendations, and in these recommendations, they really outline some of the basic things that they want to see in this program. This policy took quite some time to be developed, a long consultation process. It's a product of many, you know, wonderful minds and compromise, a lot of compromise. So what we do as staff is to look at this policy, the principles and the framework that this policy gives us, and we develop a program based on that, following that policy. And this is what is our bottom-up process. So the introduction and everything that you see, you know, why is ICANN, if you ask why is ICANN actually doing this implementation in a certain way, it has its roots and is founded in this policy for the program development. I can board approve the policy in June. Actually, it was here in Europe. We had an ICANN meeting in Paris in 2008, and that's when we had the approval of the GENESO policy, and that was the green light for staff to start, you know, working on the implementation steps. This is an ongoing program development, and the ongoing development steps are shared with the community. And this is a very critical point because I worked in product development and operations in my prior ICANN life. And usually what happens is that we have an organization that is developing a product and a service, and then when this is ready for launch, you know, it's, you know, released to the public, or that's when you learn about this product and service. Occasionally there are some consumer groups that are consulted, but in general, we as consumers, or you know, we learn about a product and service when it's launched. This is not how ICANN is working. And sometimes this causes confusion because people often ask, but where are you in the development? Why are you doing a draft applicant guidebook? Why, you know, this is not ready yet? Well, it is not ready because this development process, first of all, it's a very complex program because it is a very complex policy. And this whole development process is a shared and is a collaborative work with the internet community. You will see we have a draft applicant guidebook now that is in its version 4. And for the remote participants, what I'm holding in my hands is a copy of the draft applicant guidebook that you can download from our website. This is the roadmap for the applicant, and we are on version 4. We have done the versions before, and we have consulted with the internet community and asked for advice, and there were issues that were identified, that were groups, you know, of experts that were established to help us to address those issues. So it's an evolving product, and we are sharing with the world, you know, the steps of an evolving product. And we hope to reach, you know, the final stages sometime soon. Where we are, it's very important to note that it is due to the community cooperation, this internet community with trademark experts or people that address malicious conduct, the technical community, and so many more. You know, it is very critical, the work that they have done and the expertise that they brought to have us where we are. Here is a very, you know, high-level slide that shows, you know, when we published the guidebook, the version 1, version 2, and then there were excerpts, version 3, more excerpts. You know, some people say, why don't you just label that as versions? And, well, I do agree, but, you know, that's how that was done at this time. In blue, on the bottom, what you see is a sea of acronyms that is typical of ICANN, but those acronyms are spelled out in the new GTOD pages. But those were groups like the IRT, the STIs. Those were groups that were formed by the community with a certain expertise to address open issues that were identified in the program. Okay, so for example, now we have a very active and new working group, which is looking at ways to reduce barriers for new GTOD applicants, and they are talking about fees. And this is going to be a session on Wednesday in which this group, you know, represented through a panel of experts, is going to talk to the community about what kind of work they are doing and how they plan on developing or trying to help, you know, applicants from developing regions. So this is what the slide is about. Now, what can you potentially expect? Increasing creativity, innovation, and choice. This is something that we know when we see it. Increasing competition in the domain name space, and this is not only between registries but also registrars and brands. And we might see GTODs tailored to address specific community needs, for example, language needs or some kind of cultural needs that could help to revitalize or help to grow a certain community or spread awareness about a certain community. We could expect also geographic names represented, as I said, by regions or countries or cities or some kind of geographic designation. Probably, new ways of branding and establishing corporate identity on the internet. Nowadays, usually companies would have their brand registered in some generic and some CCTLDs, depending on their client base or their trademark or brand, internet branding strategy. In the future, they might have this and also add a top-level domain, or they might choose to brand through a generic. They will need to look at the ways that they are protecting their top-level domain or protecting their brand according to what's happening on the top-level domain as well. So I expect to see a lot of changes in the branding activities. Internationalized domain names, which are already happening with Fast Track, but Fast Track is a program that is very specific in its rules. When I talk about internationalized domain names applied to generic new GTOD program, I'm talking about really any kind of IDN, of course, following some specific string rules, but any kind of IDN. And we are going to need to have a need for user education, because in the future, depending on the volume of GTODs that we have in the marketplace, as you search for your TOD, as you're trying to find information, as you're trying to find your favorite brand or your company, you might be looking at different extensions. So we are going to need to educate the user in that respect. The other point of education that is not captured in the slide but is very critical is the education of the technical community. You should be aware that nowadays a lot of the applications that exist in the marketplace, they exist and they were developed in a way that they either identify a TOD string that has three characters, or it's all of the strings that are in the root. And what it means is that in the future, if those systems are not upgraded or if they are not changed, if you have an email address, ending with .carla, for example, the system might not recognize .carla as being a legitimate address. And then your application, when you're filling up maybe a web form, is going to fail. So we'll be working more closely with the technical community to make sure that those systems are upgraded and the systems understand and accept those new TODs. And it is very important to stress that what we are developing here and what we're going to launch in the near future is the first round, but we are going to have future rounds. This is what the policy was meant to be: first round and then future rounds, and then maybe an open process when we have a demand on when we have an understanding of what we have in the marketplace. Why is that important? Because, again, new ways that users will find and produce information online. There's more choices for registrant. There is opportunities for investment and maybe new businesses. There's opportunity for a more globally and culturally inclusive internet, particularly with the IDNs, and because we can have more registries and registrars from other regions around the world. Nowadays, if you look at the GTOD space, you will see, and you put it in the map, you will see that a lot of the current registries and registrars are located in the United States. There's one in Asia, there's two, I believe, in Europe, but it's a lot concentrated on one part of the world. And with this program, what we're hoping to see is to see a more balanced distribution of registers and registrars, potential changes on brand management, impact on cultural communities, organizations, and industry sectors, potential impact on geographic names and how people identify to geographic names and the location. System applications will need to be updated. So this is, again, to repeat all of these important things that we need to watch out for, regardless of whether or not you're going to be an applicant. It's important to stress that an application for a GTOD is not how to apply for a domain name that you want to have a website, and do some services or information or sell some products. What we're talking here is about a business commitment. If you want to apply for a GTOD, you are committing to a very complex industry. And future registries, applicants that become future registries, will be part of this complex ecosystem. So they need to understand other registries. They need to understand the registrars, what are registrants, what are resellers, how does ICANN work, how this whole DNS industry works as a whole, ISPs. So there's a lot of policy requirements that we need to be complied with. There's a lot of technical requirements that are very important to be complied with, because one of the most important issues that, or most important goals ICANN has, is to make sure that we keep the DNS stability and security. So we are going to be very strict, or we are very strict, about the technical requirements that we are going to ask from those applicants to make sure that the stability is kept. All of the information that you need at this point to be an applicant, like how, when, what, how much, where to apply, etc., this is outlined in the draft applicant guidebook. The current version is 4. It is very important that we have the right expectations and planning. If you decide to become an applicant, you just learn that maybe the application date is in a week and you decide to be an applicant, well, that's not going to happen because there's a lot of prep work that needs to happen in order for you to be an applicant, especially when it comes to the technical requirements of running a TOD. Be aware of the timelines, too. There's some things that will be under your control, but there's some things that will not be under your control. So, for example, we're trying to have very specific timelines when it comes to the evaluation steps, right? When you lodge an application and then, you know, you go through the steps of evaluation. But depending on the volume that we receive, we are going to extend some of those times to be able to cope with the volume. When the TOD application period opens, this is quite not under our control right now, because we need to finalize the issues. We need to make sure that all of the operational readiness and all of the steps that need to be taken to have this program ready to go are taken and is ready to go. So there's no launch date at this point. So timeline also, once you sign the agreement with ICANN, once you launch into the marketplace, etc., you know, it can take a few years until actually you'll be able to have a TOD available for your customer and start making money out of it, if this is your model, or maybe available for your community and start providing the services that you were committed to this community. So it might take quite some time. So be prepared for that. Be prepared for the costs of this time and the cost for applying. There's different kinds of fees that are part of this application system, but there is also the cost of establishing a GTOD registry, and there's also the cost of waiting, you know, the time period that is going to take for this whole to happen. You know, and be aware also of the level of control. A lot of people, a lot of companies that come to me and say, we have some interest in GTODs. One of the arguments that they use is that they are interested really in the level of control that they will have with their brand, or with whatever TOD that they choose, because being the registry, you know, they believe that it's probably the best way that they will have to control how this TOD operates, and they do not really at the mercy of being able, or having to pay, you know, renewal fees and making sure that this is not lost, or having to understand all the different rules in different TODs. You know, so some people prefer, you know, to consider being an applicant because of the level of control. But again, this kind of decision is a decision that is really for each company to take. Each company will have a different model, each community will have a different model and different need. So not everybody needs to be a GTOD applicant, but I do urge all of us to really watch that program, because regardless of you being or not a GTOD applicant, you'll be impacted directly or indirectly by this program, because, as I said, it changes, or potentially changes, the way information is online, and the branding practices, and your competitors might be doing something different. The industry that you're in might be going towards a different direction when it comes to online presence. So regardless of what your position is, you know, I think it's very important to be aware of what this program brings and how this program is developing. It's a complex and a very comprehensive process that we have here. We have very specific requirements, timelines, processes that are outlined in the guidebook. this evaluation system is not done by ICANN staff. It's really a composition of different experts. So here I have some names for you to, or some panels for you to just have an idea, like, for instance, string similarity, DNS stability, geographic names. You know, there's different panels that are going to look at the applicant or the application. We also have an objection process in very specific cases. We have four here, which is the string confusion, the legal rights, morality and public order, and community. So those are the four bases of objection. Those objections are handled by third-party dispute resolution providers. I have here the acronym for them. But those dispute resolution providers are helping or very responsible for developing the processes, and there's fees involved in that. There's very specific grounds for objection. This session today is not to talk about that because this is quite of a complex part of the program. But so you know, if there is an objection process, the objections are lodged directly with those providers and not with ICANN. We also will have string contention experts that would deal with string contention, and this string contention is the case where you have a GTOD that is either identical to another applicant. So I am applying for a GTOD that is exactly the same as Carol, my colleague here, is applying, or we both happen to be applying for a string that is similar and very likely to cause user confusion. And in this case, this is going also to be identified as a string contention. And I can need it to find some kind of a mechanism, some kind of a way to deal with string contention. So if we do have two or more applicants for the same string or similar strings, and all of them equally qualify, you know, according to our evaluation process, how are we going to decide who gets the string, right? So there are very specific processes to do that. One is the community priority that applies in the case an applicant identifies itself as a community-based TOD. And there's an auction process, which is the ultimate way that we decide. And there's times that people say, well, auction, we're very concerned about the cost of it, and we really don't like the fact that there's an auction process because of the cost element to it. The choice of the auction process is because it was the most neutral way that we found to deal with the string contention. The applicant. So again, the applicant is not an individual. So Carla Valente cannot go and apply for .carla. I would need to be an established entity. The established entity can be from anywhere in the world. We are going to require proof of establishment. You know, so you have to be in good standing, and you have to be, you know, established according to whatever laws and jurisdiction that, you know, apply. All of the applicants are expected to comply with the administrative, financial, and technical requirements as outlined in the draft applicant guidebook. There are standard requirements that will be for everyone. I'm going to take Q&A at the end. Is that okay? So that will apply to everyone. There are some very specific requirements that apply in two cases. One is if a TOD identifies itself as a geographic name. And the second is if a TOD applicant identifies itself as community-based. In those specific cases, there are additional requirements. Successful applicants or future registrants will be expected to follow very specific industry, technical, and legal standards. And there's going to be an ongoing contractual relationship with ICANN, and this is represented through what we call registry agreement and sometimes base agreement. In any case, you do have a draft in this applicant guidebook of what this agreement is, so you understand what is going to be future business commitment with ICANN. And there's also an ongoing financial commitment. This agreement outlines what is the yearly fee or transaction-based fee that registrars will be expected to pay to ICANN, you know, in the future. So I urge you to take a look at the applicant guidebook and read very carefully the base agreement to make sure that, you know, if you choose to be a registrar in the future, you understand what is going to be the ongoing commitment. A TOD string, the string or the label or the top level domain have very specific rules, again outlined in the applicant guidebook. There's a minimum number of strings, there's a maximum number of characters, there's a maximum number of characters, there's very specific requirements, particularly for IDNs, on what kind of information you can provide, what you can or cannot do. Watch out, also we have a reserve names list. If you try to apply for TLD that is on the reserve list, the system will reject. GTLD strings and applications are treated individually. There's a question that we often get. So I apply for .carla and I want .carla in Chinese. Can I get a discount? Can I pay only one fee? Because it's the same, but it's in, you know, just a different language. At this point in the program, what we are proposing is that applications are treated individually, which means every application has its own fee and every application is going to go individually through the application process, or to evaluation process, sorry. There is a specific process, as I mentioned before, if more than one string is the same, or two or more applicants have the same string or similar string. Very specific requirements if somebody applies for what it's called a geographic name. So we do expect this applicant to provide documentation demonstrating government support or non-objection, and we have some examples of what we mean by that. If you are labeling or identifying yourself as an applicant community-based TLD, then we are going to have to make sure that this is operated for the benefit of the community, and you're going to be asked to have a written endorsement. And there's some specific rules about community base. Again, the geographic and the community base are very specific processes, and there are very specific rules about that. And we plan on having webinars in the near future that would specifically address those. So this is not the session really for specific questions about this this rules. The submission process and fees. So we do have a program at this point that is English-based. And we will be working towards having that changed in the future. We make the draft applicant guidebook, all of the relevant supporting documents and basic marketing information available in six languages, which are the six United Nations languages. So we make an effort to have all this information available in the languages. Sometimes the timing of the translation is not ideal, but is there. When you submit your application, you will see that we have a TLD application system, which we call shortly TAS. And this is just a web-based system, secure system, that is being designed to collect the information and documentation and actually look at all of the process flow of a certain application. This system is English-based, so when you log into the system, you'll be asked questions in English. But when you submit documents, so you'll be able to attach documents into the system, like financial statements, the proof of establishment of an entity, and so forth. Those documents can be in your original language. We are going to deal with that internally. But the documents need to be valid, you know, at a specific time. So be careful when you submit the document. We will have customer support, a very specific customer support that is for the applicant. You can request slots, and you're going to have a very unique user ID for each of the slots that you request on your TOD. We are asking for a $5,000 deposit in this application, this registration in the system. This is credited against the valuation fee, which is the $185,000, which means that you pay $5,000 and then $180,000. There's refunds apply to very specific case. Again, the whole process of payment and refunds, as this is not the session to go into that in depth. We will have a session to go into that in depth, because we'll be receiving deposits and fees from all over the world, so I'm sure people will have a lot of questions on how this is going to work. What is very important for you to be aware of is that we not only have this fee, depending on the application path, you know, you might be faced as an applicant with other fees. Like, for instance, if someone objects to your string and you need to defend to that objection, There's fees that apply. If you need an additional review of your registry services, an additional fee apply. If your TOD goes to community resolution or goes to auction, additional fees apply. You know? So this is the basic evaluation fee that applies to all, but additional fees apply depending on the path of a specific application. This is really a high-level view of what the process is. So ideally, you have an application period, then it goes through initial evaluation, and then a transition to delegation. Transition to delegation is simply signing the base agreement or registry agreement with ICANN, and there is an additional technical check that is very standard that all of the applicants will have to go through before a TOD is finally added to the route. And I urge you to be very careful about the technical requirements because, as I said to you, because of the DNS stability concerns that we have to make sure that this is stable, we are very strong on this technical requirement. So even if you sign an agreement, if by the time we do this technical check, your registry is not ready and doesn't pass the technical check, it will not be added to the route. So be very careful with the technical requirements. Now, what you see in the dotted lines here, it's, you know, extended evaluation or projection and dispute resolution, string contention. So all of that is are different paths that an application can take, sometimes even a combination of those paths, right? And the timing that your application will be processed will depend on the on this path. Now, the tricky part is that, and that goes to my point initially saying about the control regarding the timing. So let's say that your TOD string is caught in a contention set. Well, you will have to go through the string contention set before you'll be able to go to the transition to delegation step. You know, so there's no way to know in advance what path and what is going to happen to TOD, because a lot of what is going to happen will depend on who applies for what and who objects for what. So what is next? At this point, we do not have an official launch date, and this is very important to stress because there's very often there are speculations in the marketplace that we're launching on a certain day or certain quarter, certain month. At this point, we do not have an official launch date. What we are working on is to finalizing some of the remaining issues. We will finalize and publish a final applicant guidebook, hoping not to have the need for a draft 5, but honestly, it will really depend on the comments we receive on draft 4. It will really depend on how we address the remaining issues. So we don't know if we're going to have a version 5. We believe that considering the content and the complexity of it that we have in the draft applicant guidebook, the future versions would not be extremely different. They might add some things, but not be so extremely different. Our main goal is to get that right as much as we can get it right, because we know that there will be lessons learned once we launch. But we are not here to do things fast necessarily, but we're here to do things right, you know, the best way that we can. We need to finalize our operational readiness, which means hiring all of the evaluators that we mentioned, that I mentioned before, making sure that the system is in place and tested, our customer support is in place, we have the staff, and everything, you know, is up and running. So when you lodge your application, you can have the best customer service or the best experience that we can provide. We also be implementing a targeted global communications campaign, and this is specifically to notify around the world the major media venues that there's a final applicant guidebook and there's an application period, which you need to be very careful about, because there's going to be an opening date and a close date. And if you miss that window of application, you will have to wait for the next round. There's going to be an opening date for the objection process and a closing date. So if you miss that window, you know, there's other things that you might need to consider, but you miss that objection window. So be very careful about the specific dates that we'll publish. All the information about the applicants, the strings, and non-private information about the applicant is going to be made available for the public. You know, we are a transparent and open organization. The information about the applications and the applicants will be posted online on our website. And at this point, you will be able to see who applied for what. I encourage you to attend three sessions here that are related to the new GTOD program. We had one yesterday that was a program update that was specific to the applicant guidebook. But if you're interested in IDNs, I encourage you to go and watch the IDN variant and CCTOD fast track session, because they're going to be talking about variants and some of the things apply to us in the new GTOD program. I also encourage you to attend the Reducing Barriers to New GTOD Creation in Developing Countries that take place on Wednesday in the main Gold Room. There is a new group that was formed to look into the ways to help applicants from developing countries, and this is what the session is about. So if you are an applicant or you know potential applicants from developing countries, this is a development that you should be watching for, to see what this group comes up with. Then we have also a session that is brand management in the age of new GTODs. So we have a set of intellectual property protection mechanisms during the application process and beyond. How do they impact, you know, the brand manager or trademark protection nowadays? So you, if you are a brand manager, if you are a trademark practitioner, what exactly is that you need to do during an application or beyond that to effectively use the trademark protection mechanisms, because the landscape is going to change a little bit. If you want to find more information or more detailed information on a specific topic besides the applicant guidebook, please go to the ICANN website. We have a new GTOD program site with several pages with information. We are constantly updating that. There's going to be new updates coming up in 2 weeks or so. We have also Twitter, and I use the Twitter to really communicate to the community when we publish something or something critical is happening for the new GTOD program, because in our announcements there are so many things going on that I don't want people that are interested in this program to miss on something important that has been published or is happening. Also write to newgtod@icann.org. We have webinars, and we're going to be putting on very specific topic or topic specific webinars in the upcoming months, and this you find when you go to the homepage. On the top navigation bar, you see e-learning pages. Click on that, and then you will see some audio and video materials. And please attend ICANN meetings, because this is one of the best ways really to get to know staff and be able to interface and ask questions. And if you cannot attend the meeting, attend that remotely. If you cannot be there in person, we really invest in our remote participation, expecting people to be able to, you know, get the information in all the ways possible. Our next ICANN meeting is going to be at the end of the year in Cartagena, Colombia. So this is it for me for now, and I open the floor for questions.
You might mention that anybody wanted the slides, if you find them.
Oh, that's right. So Carol just reminded me that this specific presentation, as well as the recording of this session, will be available at the meetings site. So if you go to the meeting site schedule and then go to the new GTOD basic session, click on that, you will have there the audio and you will have the PowerPoint presentation available for you. So if you have any questions. Yes.
Do I need to press this?
Yes, please, because it's going to be recorded.
Hi, Carla. Paul Foody. I noticed in the economic assessment that Canon has applied for Doc Canon. But on the basis of what the girl was saying yesterday in the GTLD explanation, it seems that you won't allow that because of the vertical integration. Is that correct?
So I'm going to make a confession that I didn't finish reading the economic study yet. because I was really, really in the trenches with all of the applicant guidebook and the explanatory memos and that, and the economic study came afterwards. Right, it was very recently published, so I didn't finish yet. I don't have any comments on that comment, on that canon, and what are their plans, and I don't know what this economic study specifically says for you to come to that conclusion. But I can tell you that that canon did not apply for anything because there's no applications being lodged at this point.
According to the economic survey, they're the first people, the first company that's actually announced that it's going to want its own .tld, .company TLD.
I have seen .canon's announcement. I know that they have expressed some interest, but again, I have not read the economic study, and I don't know.
But would the DAG 4, would it permit .canon to have .canon?
So that's a very direct question. .canon can have .canon.
Would Canon be allowed .canon?
So Canon company can apply for .canon, and they are going to be treated as every applicant. They will have to comply with all of the evaluation requirements and, you know, pay the fee, and, you know, will they get .canon if they fulfill all of the requirements like every other candidate?
I'm not making myself clear, obviously, but would they be permitted, would the vertical integration requirements within the DAG 4, which I haven't actually read myself, so I'm in the same state as you,
would
the vertical integration preclude .canon?
Yeah. So I need to look at this issue very specifically, to be honest with you, before I just, you know, answer your question. I have to read through that and understand better how you came to that conclusion. But that said, you know, brings me to the point that vertical integration, so in Nairobi the board says we have, you know, the issue for now is going to be as it is. However, there is a working group that is working on a policy development on vertical integration, and I don't know where they are. I know that they are working on this issue now in the Brussels meeting, but I don't know where they are in the process, and I don't know what's going to happen with this policy. Yeah, so we need to really watch what this working group on vertical integration is going to do and what is going to happen with that specific issue to come to, you know, really analyze who's going to be able to apply for what in the future. I think it's a bit premature at this point. We need to see.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Alexander Schubert. I'm the vice president of .gay LLC. And I'm following the new GTLD process since 2005, that was even before it started, and there usually always was a timeline, even if it moved, but since I think a year or so, there's no timeline anymore. Do you think there will come a timeline again, or do you think there will be simply the application window?
So let me make sure that I understand the question. Your question is whether or not we are going to publish a timeline that would demonstrate when the application period is going to happen, or you're going to learn, you know, that there's going to be an application period through the media because we simply launched a communications campaign, right?
Yeah, in the past it was always like in about a year the application window will open. That was kind of a timeline.
True.
And then I think a year ago you said we were not publishing any timeline anymore because we have to change it anyway.
Yeah, because the problem that happens is, as I shared with this audience at the beginning of my presentation, is the fact that what is unique about the new GTOD program is the fact that we're developing a product and sharing the development steps with the world. Right, and at the beginning we made some assumptions that certain things would take a certain time to be done. It turns out that due to the community feedback and the expectations by the community, we had to extend those timelines. We had to change our approach to addressing certain issues. Like, for example, the community asked for additional intellectual property or trademark protection measures. So we had to address that. Mm-hmm. Community asked for additional ways to prevent malicious conduct. We had to address that. And some of those things were not really easy to foresee when we were at the beginning of the program development. And that's the reason why at the beginning you saw some expectation of a timeline, but then as we really started working on it and sharing with the community and actually addressing the community's comments and community's expectations, we had to change that. At this point, what we want to make sure is that we finalize these open issues and we have a very clear idea and we enter into a more controlled stage. So, for example, if what we need to do is operational readiness, this is in our control, right? Because it's building the systems. So those are the kind of things that are going to be left. So maybe at this point we would be able to share a more specific timeline. What we want to make sure is that whatever we publish from now on, we can honor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we have, you know, more control about that, because there's a lot of people that are preparing applications, establishing companies, preparing investment, you know, that are relying on timelines, and we need to make sure that we provide the best information possible for these people to plan accordingly and not to lose money.
And if you go for a community TRD, you have to already now get your support, otherwise someone else is doing. So that's why so many are out there and already establishing their support, which is not so easy if you don't have a timeline and the final rules.
I hear you. And it is true. It's not only community support, but it's also geographic-based TODs, right? Political systems work or change all the time. Yeah? There's re-elections and all kinds of things. So, yes, I understand there is some difficulties and some complexity when we don't have a very specific timeline. But I can assure you we're working the best that we can, you know, to balance out what the community wants to see in terms of quality of the program and, you know, what needs to be done. Yes, please.
Carla, thank you very much for your explanation. My name is Markus Barmann. I'm most probably going for the Dot Bavaria initiative.
Okay.
My question, when I was disturbing you during your speech, was you mentioned in your speech that an application can only be made not by an individual, but only by an entity. I'm owner of a company which is based on the Seychelles Island. It was very easy to establish it, and the sole shareholder. Would this be a suitable applicant?
Yeah. No, that is a good question.
I'm not going for it for the Dot Bavaria initiative. Not with my Seychelles company.
Oh, I see. What is the show company for then?
Pardon?
What is the show company for then? We have an alarm system. This went off before? Okay. Yeah, so there's a specific review of every established entity, and I need to double-check about the sole proprietorship that you just mentioned. But there's a specific review for every kind of established entity, and I don't believe there's anything against established entities in, you know, shell companies or where, or the location where the entity is established. But we will be reviewing the legitimacy of the company, you know, good standing, all the documentation that proves the establishment of the company.
No, to be a little bit more specific, you probably know that we face a very special situation in Germany. We have other competitors for the same string. So we have a contention set. We already know this. For example, for Bavaria, for Berlin, and so on. And for all what we know so far is that the applicant will be a sole shareholder company. It's only one person standing behind it so far.
Yeah, that's a good question. Let me get back to you on that. Okay, I have to review some things in the applicant guidebook, and I have to review some things with our team. And let me get back to you.
Okay.
Thank you. Do you have any more questions? Okay. So, yes? Oh, yes. Hi.
We do.
I have a mic here. Yes.
Thank you. My name is Stefan Pedasek from IP Twins. You mentioned the application fees, but you didn't refer to the annual fee.
Yes, I didn't go into depth about every single fee, right? There's an evaluation or application fee or evaluation fee of $1,085. And there's also different fees depending on the application path. And once a registry, let's say the applicant is successful to go through the evaluation process and becomes a registry, there's a contract that is signed with ICANN, and in this contract there's a $25,000 ongoing annual fee. There's plus some transaction fees. So there is an ongoing financial and legal commitment that comes with becoming a registry. I mentioned that at the very beginning, but I didn't specify all of the fees and all of the... Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Daniel Perez. I'm from .fam Association, and we claim a .fam for each family. And my question is that, well, regarding the strings confusion, is there a way to test the possible confusions before the application, or maybe if there is a string confusion, could we change a little bit the string to override this problem?
Yeah, so we do have a system that you could add your string, but the challenge is that we don't know what it comes, you know, with from other applicants too. You can test your string against what exists in the marketplace now, but we don't know what is going to be applied for in the future.
So if we have the existing strings already, for example the CCTLDs, how we know the degree of confusion? Is there a program, I don't know, or is there a fixed team of people doing that, to whom we could ask just a simple question, or I don't know?
Yeah, so we did develop an algorithm system that does look at strings, right? The issue that you're talking about. But confusion is a very human thing, right? What is confusing to you might be different what is confusing to me. I don't speak Arabic, and I look at some Arabic words, and I find them extremely similar because I don't speak Arabic, you know? So confusion is a very... unique and very personal thing. So that's why, in addition to this algorithm, we also have a panel of experts that is going to be looking at strings and creating this contention set. This panel of experts has not been hired yet and has not been composed yet. So, and I don't think they would be available, even if they were hired, they would be available up front to the applicants to, you know, discuss strings. You know, there's some ethical reasons for that. I don't think they would do that.
Okay, and do you think after the application, if there's any problem, the applicant could have a little of flexibility? Or?
So I don't believe you can change the string once you applied for it.
It's difficult, isn't it?
I know, it's a risk. It's a challenge.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi. This is Susan Reynolds from .gal. I wanted to ask you if you think we're in the right path, or do you think there will be important delays, a big problem, so the process could even be stopped, or do you think this is going forward finally?
So I don't have any specific reason to believe that the process would be stopped. You know, in my view, I don't see any of this. Now, again, the delay, it goes back to my comment about the control regarding the timing. We need to finalize addressing the issues. And a lot of this work is done in collaboration with the community. It's not a decision that is done only by ICANN staff. So we need to look at those developments. We need to look at getting things as right as possible. Not perfect. We're not aiming for perfect. Perfection doesn't exist. But we are aiming for excellence as much as we can in this program. And I know how frustrating it is not to have a timeline. Yes.
But, Will there be a 5 draft, or it just depends on the public comment of the 4 draft?
It depends on the public comment. Ideally, I can tell
so
you.
So, if there are no big problems, this might move forward.
So,
more
if
or
there
less
are
quickly.
No, if there are no major issues, you know, we do believe that we are very close to a final guidebook. If there are no major issues.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have one on the remote participation, if I could. This is from Noori, Noori, Nori. It says he is a representative from .curd, TLD. Thanks, Carla, for the presentation. How can a political situation influence the path of an applicant? Is his first question. And is there a defined fixed fee for objecting the process?
Object. Yeah, the second one I'm not sure if I understand. The first one, how can a political situation influence an applicant? I'm not sure I'm qualified to answer that. I think it depends on the political situation and the applicant itself. One of the things I can say is that in some specific situations, if you apply for a geographic name, you're going to have you're going to need government support or non-objection, and depending on the political situation, that might be a little bit of a challenge to get, but it really depends on the TOD, depends on the political situation. I think each case is different and it's very hard to speculate. And my apologies for the second question, I don't quite understand.
I'm going to repeat it. It says, is there defined fixed fee for objecting the process?
Yeah, so there are 4 objection grounds, and those objections are lodged with dispute resolution providers, and they have specific fees, and we have those fees outlined in the draft applicant guidebook.
Thank you. I have one more that came up, and it's Pinky, and it says, are there any entries that are specifically not allowed to own a GTLD from a business perspective?
Entities not allowed to own a GTLD? Yeah, private, but he's asking for entities. I'm not sure. I think maybe this is the case in which, for example, I establish a company and I try to apply for somebody else's trademark, and this party can object because they have rights, already pre-established rights. But other than that, I'm not sure if you understand what the details of the questions are.
All I have is those questions at
okay.
this time.
Thank you to our remote participants, and thank you, everybody. Is there anyone else in the room? So thank you, everybody, for coming, for your time today. And I expect to see you in the sessions on Wednesday. Take care.